Hi, welcome to On Writing, your fortnightly podcast about writing and writing communities. And I am MJ, she, her, and we have a very special episode for you today. And we have our friend who's visited us before, Diana Helmuth, and she's back to talk about her new book, The Witching Hour, or The Witching Year. I just about called it The Witching Hour. It's The Witching Year.
Ernest fumbling it happens. Yeah.
That'd be a very short book, The Witching Hour.
It's a lot of witching hours.
Yeah. Does anyone have the rent math on that really quick? Yeah, I'm Sean, he, him, and that I do not have a cat, but I do have a yerba mate, so that's my participation here.
I'm Chad, he, him, and I've got a cat and she rules. You're missing out.
I really am.
I'm Diana, she, her, and I have two cats, so yeah, not trying to be better than other people, but
this cat has been hanging out in the driveway the past 2 days. I don't know what you would call it because I'm not really a cat expert. I call her an orange cream popsicle colored cat.
Well, if she's orange, then you call her Percy. That's just the law.
Well, she's white, but she has like really big creamy orange spots. And she's really pretty and really cute and really cool. And I walked up and she was really cool. I'm like, bad timing, kitty. And I went inside to go hang out with the cat I already saved.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the cat distribution system, but I hate to break this to you, but that is your cat. You have a bit of an obligation now to feed it and keep it safe. Even if someone else owns it.
I mean, that was how he got the first one. So.
Stealing cats is important.
Yeah, what's even cooler is that this cat also apparently has like the ghost of a really cool dog in it. So like, whoa. Double win. Mm-hmm.
Everything's a little
I also haunted. Found out that I think like my local pharmacist may be the person that lives across the street where my cat used to hang out. But I found out when I took somebody to get vaccinated by this pharmacist that she is really stupid.
Oh.
Like unbelievably okay. Stupid. Like I asked... I go, hey, are the COVID shots still being paid for by the government? And she goes, I don't know. And I go, okay. Well, if they aren't, how much are the COVID shots? She goes, well, I just billed somebody's insurance a few hours ago. I go, okay, how much did you bill them for? She goes, I don't know. I'm like, okay, it also took you like 3 hours to get these shots. And then she's like, yeah, hey, don't you guys live across the street? And I'm like, you probably would have named her something stupid like Pussy or something.
I don't know.
Gotta be at war with your local
pharmacist. Yeah, this cat has been liberated.
Freed from the pharmacist shackles.
Well, yeah,
so I have a really...
Sorry. Oh, go ahead, Sean.
Oh, I have a really quick rundown on just... This is the same set of questions we have to ask all witchy guests. So obviously, star sign.
Oh, that's me. Yeah. Well, this is a complicated answer. How much time do we have?
You have about like, it's just a short survey. We should get through it in the next like 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay. I am a Leo, but I identify more with my moon sign, which is Taurus. So,
okay. Leo, but more Taurus moon rising. Got it. And, what is your least favorite element?
Oh man. Wait, okay. But that's like the whole plot of my book. What?
It's just on the quiz. I mean, I have to get through this right here, or else how are we gonna like?
Oh, God, water.
Okay, and most favorite season. I can just pencil that in as fall, right? Spring. Like all witchy. Ah, okay. Well, yeah, I have to redo the whole chart. Thanks for that.
I actually wrote a whole essay about this recently. How I actually hate fall, and I'm afraid to say it out loud because I will be excommunicated as a white woman and a budding witch if I say I don't like fall. I like spring. I like spring. I like flowers.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Flowers is good.
The idea of being burned at the stake for not being witchy enough causes a funny, ironic
conundrum. By other witches, right? Yeah.
Hang on, something's wrong here.
The vibes are off.
Witch Vox is dead now. We all used to do this, like burning each other for alive in the witch forums on Witch Vox in the day.
Was that like an angel fire site for witches, or like what was that?
It was kind of like if you there's a tarot site that still exists that has the same kind of like BBS feel to it, like a forum type deal. Mm-hmm. And they're all different like aspects of Witchvox back in the day. And I've done several different of the Facebook groups too for the large pagan and witchcraft ones. But like the Witchvox was like old school,
man. Yeah.
I'm laughing at the thought of it being the Obi-Wan quote from episode 3 where there's a witch tied up to a stake by a bunch of other witches. And then looking around going, wait a second, how did this happen? We're more pagan than this.
But my impression that I got from your book, Diana, was that you had done a lot more things than you had written about. And I'm really curious about how you funneled all of like experiences of an entire year to like a very nicely organized, good arc throughout a one book. That's not super long. It's like really readable and a good length.
334 pages, according to Kindle.
Thank you so much. This is only a question another writer would ask, I'm sure. honestly, no one has asked me that yet. I wrote 165,000 words.
Holy shit.
Damn.
They said in my contract was 80. And mm-hmm. My editor was like, and I was like, I know, but she's like, yeah, we're absolutely not publishing 100. Sorry, sweetie, you're not. You're interesting. You're not. That interesting.
I'm just visualizing the witching year Way of Kings, like just like a Neal Stephenson book, just huge.
I have to ask if I rubbed off on you after the last interview, and they were like, workout curse. Well, and they were like, you're interesting, but you're not that interesting. You looked up, and you're like, you want to argue that point?
Yeah,
you want to make an issue of it? I think I'm pretty fucking interesting. Thank you.
Well, no, and I mean the nice thing about an editor is that a good one who you know is on your team, who wants the same things you do for the thing you're trying to make, they are saving you from yourself. And I happen to like my editor, which is a lucky position to be in. So I trusted her. But yeah, we basically had to cut it. I think they let me get away with 110. So I still got away with quite a bit, but. the tricky thing about nonfiction is that you are taking real life and trying to build a narrative out of it that A, makes sense, and B, is honest, and mm-hmm. C, is interesting. You don't get the benefit of universe building in fiction. You have to work with what is there. So how did we do it? It became clear as the year went on that some themes were starting to appear. There were things I would try and do, spells I would try and cast that, you know, would come up later. Like, what were the results of that? Did summoning the demon work? Did I actually make contact with a hawk, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth is, just to more bluntly answer your question, it took a lot of editing. Editing is great. I am grateful for my editors, and we did find a narrative in there. And I'm happy we didn't have to actually change too much. There's a little disclaimer in the beginning that's, you know, some identities have been changed, some names have been changed, and some timelines have been condensed for brevity. But there's really only like one thing that we moved out of order just to make it make slightly more sense as a narrative. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was a lot we cut. But honestly, some of it I think was kind of cool, and maybe some of it was just me running around in a circle with my hair on fire. And it's like, that's cute for like 2 seconds, not for 40,000 words. But that's how witchcraft makes you feel.
I mean, there was that one narrow element of fiction that you did admonish as being fiction, where Gardner was like, oh yeah, I have a coven. You just haven't met them. They go to a different school. they're totally Paleolithic witches who have been telling me all their secrets. No, you can't meet them.
Mm-hmm. Totally, and no one totally believes real. Him. I mean, I don't think anyone. Well, no, I'm sure some people do. I actually think most people don't, and it's okay because what he produced is good enough that mm-hmm. it doesn't require historical legitimacy, which is also a central tension in the book. Is like, how do I take this seriously, accepting I can't have historical legitimacy? And that was very, very, very hard for me to do. But I like to think I got there. I think that was actually a real moment of personal growth. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people who dabble in neo-paganism quite seriously, you have to do that at some point. You have to face that inside yourself and go, okay, knowing that this is, bullshit, according to some people, am I still going to believe in this, and why? and mm-hmm. where's the integrity and the ethics and the morality there? And that if you can do that, that is self-empowering enough that it almost goes back into this whole feedback loop of why witches are insanely confident appearing people. It's not just that they commune with the divine. It's that they have accepted. They don't really care if you think this is bullshit. You end up back at square one in a weird way. Yeah.
I do want to point in something to your credit that you apprehended that a lot of people don't. That is the official position of this podcast. Jurassic Park is a horror movie. We have talked about.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there actually people that in like non-mimetic ways think otherwise?
It's like a whole point in the book.
Classified as an action adventure, which arguably it is. Granted, I was 5 when I saw Jurassic Park. I was too young. It scared the absolute crap out of me. I mean, when the kids are in that Jeep, are you kidding me? I had a nightmare mm-hmm. for a week. That's terrifying.
Another running theme on this podcast is that when I was young, I jumped to some really stupid conclusions. Like, I made connections that were just not supposed to be. The song My Grandfather Clock is probably the best example of it. But rather than go down that rabbit hole,
I think it was like episode like 40 case, or something that yeah, you can hear that.
Yeah, the part that scared the shit out of me was when the T-Rex's foot comes out and steps down, and I go, he's so strong and heavy, he liquefied the asphalt he stepped on instead of thinking that he stepped in mud.
Well, and when you're 5, you can't be soothed by the handsome presence of Jeff Goldblum or the rapier wit of Dr. Ellie Statler or the like kind of hot dad science vibes of crap.
Sam
I forget
Neill.
His name.
Sam Neill.
Sam Neill. Yeah. None of it's there. It's just,
yeah,
screaming really, dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's really weird is that before that, I knew him as the son of Satan.
In what was Sam Neill?
Yeah, he was grown up Damien in Omen 3.
Ooh. In Omen 3, he okay.
Yeah. Jesus, that's crazy.
So Sam Neill was in Omen 3 is now a thought I have to live with, like in my normal life.
That also means that like Event Horizon was just going home.
Oh yeah, you're right. It's okay. Now he went to space, and now he's okay. It all makes sense.
Understood. Well, I wanted to touch on the like crazy connection thing and like expand on that. As Diana knows, but I'll tell you, well, listeners, I've read a lot about witchcraft and the occult, and especially tarot. And I got a little disenchanted after like the QAnon bullshit connection started to happen,
I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with that. Can you?
Oh my God. Okay.
Give me a quick breakdown. Yeah.
Okay. So QAnon has become rapidly approaching like the confluence of neo-paganism and witchiness. And you flagged this up uh-huh. early on in the book that you're yeah. like, I was interested in being able to connect with my like German heritage in like a non-cringy way. And I'm like,
cue the violence.
Turn the screen towards Marjorie. And I'm like, this is what we call foreshadowing. You're like,
exactly. Nailed it. You nailed it. Yeah.
Like I imagine you're familiar with like the Q shaman and stuff, like the guy who was there on J6 and the buffalo head and stuff. There is a huge overlap, especially with like the Mount Shasta crew and a lot of the Star Soul elements, and obviously the whole Saint Germain elements with elements of, if not canonical, white supremacy in the idea that like, no, Trump is the white light and he will save everyone with his powerful like goddess energies that are coming for you.
Trump but, having goddess energy was not on my bingo card for this week.
But it's
glad we got there though. Okay.
Yeah.
Especially astrology got really bad. I think it was like 2019. I want to say that like this was starting to. I saw it in witchy spaces. 2020 for sure. But yeah,
it had a certain amount of confluence with the anti-vax movement. Militias around Northern California, because you mentioned you didn't want to get a flat tire in Redding, and I was like, me neither.
It also has a connection to the cult leader who is like, I'm the oldest being to have ever existed, mm-hmm. and Donald Trump is my father.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And those that really, really cringy History Channel show called like Mountain Men, which is a bunch of white dudes that live in cabins on Social Security, and they're like, this is in my blood. I'm like, I don't think it's in your blood. You're a wasp. Like,
dude.
Like, bogs and pastoral fields and, like textile mills are in your blood, dude.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Your genetic legacy goes back to like being really shitty at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. It isn't your intimate connection with the land ended
like, yeah, miles natural, away. Like these things have things have names like Bear Lake and like Eagle Peak, but like it must terrify your genetic legacy because not one of those words has a hyphen between them.
Yeah. But anyway, I had gotten disenchanted a little bit with the witchy community, having been in it for a very long time. And
yeah,
I was really excited to get your memoir. And I'm not like I've read Crowley's memoir like forever ago, and I don't really remember it very much. But I really enjoy like this approach to looking at witchcraft, because I don't read a huge number of memoirs. I read a few, but like it's a really, I think, underutilized like nonfiction part of the witchy realm. Like the Llewellyns are all kind of nonfiction, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was, I mean, the premise of the book, and I remember I actually had a little bit of trouble pitching it. I mean, my first book was a how-to. Most books about witchcraft are how-tos. But
mostly about baths.
When seriously, don't get me fucking started on the bath. I sound like a bad person when I talk about witchcraft and baths, so let's not go there. But I said I wanted to write a book about witchcraft where I just do it for a year because I really want to show how vulnerable that journey is. Like I'm skeptical, but I want this. I'm willing, but I am scared. I want to dip my toes in, but I'm honestly afraid of the temperature of the water. What if it actually feels good? Not that it feels bad. What if it feels good? And they said, yeah, but the reader's not getting what they need when they want it. And I submitted this proposal to a series of agents, and they kind of ripped it apart, and it broke my heart. And then I sat with it for a few days, and I turned around and I said, no, you're never supposed to say this as a writer. You're really not. But I was like, you're reading it wrong. You're reading it wrong. Or rather, this is what I mean. And maybe that's not what this currently says, so help me say it better, which is a better phrasing. But I said, I want to show the skeptic's journey. I'm not telling anyone how to do anything. This is not a how-to. This is a memoir. And they said, you can't write a memoir unless you're already famous. And I said, well, can we just call it something else? Participatory journalism? And they said, yeah. And then what's funny is now the subtitle is actually memoir. At the end, they were like, but it's a memoir. We need to call it memoir. And I was like, you fucks told me I could. You told me I wasn't interesting enough to write a memoir. But that's the genre thing about memoir.
Fake, you either, yeah.
I think the thing about memoir that I keep being told is you either have to be someone interesting or do something interesting. And I think I got away with doing something interesting, even though I am like relatively speaking a nobody, you know? So that was the tension, but
beyond that, I think that like you, I knew you before I read any of your writing. And so I had like a sense of your personality, but I really enjoy your personality on the page. And it's really interesting to like, it is like hanging out with you, like reading your nonfiction. And like, I'm like, that's so cool.
I deeply respect the discipline, because if I'm having a conversation like that, I cannot resist going full John Malkovich and only calling it a memoir.
Memoir.
And they're like, well, do you want to do something that's kind of like journalistic, or would you like memoir? And I just sit up and go, I've always thought about writing a memoir.
My memoir. Yeah. Well, there are witchcraft memoirs out there. I think, I can't remember her name right now. Okay. They exist. And it's not that they are bad, but I had read a couple and it was like, I was born and then the moon talked to me and I knew I was the witch and I had a higher calling. And I'm like, good for fucking you. Must be nice. I was like, I'm sitting here staring at a candle going, I kind of want to talk to the candle, but that makes me feel like insane and stupid. And I was like, I'd like to hear from that person. No one had written that book yet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, what if I wrote it? And then my fondest egotistical hope for this book is that other people would read it and feel seen, or at least validated. Like, hey, if you are drawn to this stuff and you're picking it all up, but it doesn't feel like it's working and you still have doubt and skepticism and the moon is not talking to you immediately and you can't do anything right, it's okay. is still worthwhile. You know, that would be my fondest wish for this
book. I thought I could be helpful by bailing you out and like Googling real fast witch memoir, and all I got was this one weird one by somebody named Diana Helmuth as my top Google.
Apparently you're on the charts, yeah. And one of the weirdest things that I like went to Goodreads and left a review, and then I left another review on my mom's account because Amazon is like that.
I'm flattered, truly.
The one bad one was like, it doesn't draw any conclusions about witchcraft. And it's like, what? Excuse me? Like, what book did you read? Well,
Don Martin, who wrote The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, who I'm a little bit of an acquaintance with, he told me he got continuous criticism after he published his book that people were like, there's no spells in here. I'm like, no, once again, louder for the people in the back. It's not a how-to, and I'm not teaching you how to do anything. I am not qualified to do so. I have no desire to do so. And yeah,
I'm sorry, you need to hire me as your response manager because you need to respond with, I'm sorry, we were opting for a soft magic system in this
book. Oh, strong.
I mean, I get it. Maybe people wanted me to leave the year going, I am now fully self-actualized. I eat spell loved my way into like marrying an Italian guy in Bali or however that book ends. But like, that's not what happened.
Yeah, fuck Elizabeth Gilbert, by the way.
Well, I mean, I don't know about fuck. I mean, you can say fuck Elizabeth Gilbert and I won't fight you, but it was more like it real life isn't always that clean. I'm sorry I couldn't give you the bow you wanted on the package, but you know, that's just one person.
So. Well, and I think it's not just for the people who are starting witchcraft and like beginning out. Like I said, like I've been doing this for a while, and like it's really exciting to see someone document it in the way you did, because like we kind of danced around, like most of the stuff out there about witchcraft is telling you how to do something. It is teaching you how to do tarot or spells or whatever. And it's so refreshing to see something out there of just, because it's experimentation. Like anyone that talks about like the occult tradition and magic, like magic before science was the thing that you experimented with. You tried to see if that spell could keep the rooster alive that you wrapped it around their neck, you know?
Yeah. God, I'm glad we watched that yesterday. Okay.
But I'm also laughing at the thought of some rooster going, ah, shit, he's reading a grimoire again.
Yeah. Well, like every other spell is like how to become invulnerable, immune to snares, and live forever. And it's like, if you are unsure of this spellcraft, test on your local rooster and then ensure that it is functional. And I'm like, what are you going to do with that rooster after that? It's the goddamn Highlander.
Well, isn't that also the greatest part, by the way, of like those old things, is they would have the most unrelated lists attached to them? It's like, this is for invulnerability. Immunity to disease. Okay, that makes sense. Immunity to snares. Okay.
I mean, and toothache. And don't forget toothache.
Yeah. Yes. Fixes toothache. Removes boils. Okay, that's all kind of health related. Lets you know the moon cycle without relying on a lunar calendar. Why?
I could look up too.
Yeah. Is that a problem we needed to solve? I
think the funniest one was the MJ. You remember it? The one where it's like, call a spirit and get the ring of invisibility, but do not sleep with it until you get the ring of invisibility, to be clear.
Because once you bang her, she will not give you the ring.
Yes, you can sleep with the spirit of air, but only after she gives you the ring of invisibility, okay? That we just have to get that flow chart right.
Like, we all know you really want to fuck her, so let's just be clear right up front.
The idea of somebody going, you got the ring of invisibility first, right? And the very satisfied guy goes, ring?
What?
This is all from the Book of Oberon, by the way, if any of you are interested, where I was reading. It's a compilation of various other magical manuals.
I'm a lot less interested in the Book of Oberon, a lot more interested in this air spirit.
I'm very interested in the Book of Oberon.
Does she have an Instagram?
The spirit Ariel on OnlyFans. I think Ariel from The Tempest would do pretty good on OnlyFans, you know?
There probably is already 5 of them, like, let's be real.
I mean, probably, yes, especially after the Gundam show, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the audience of this book really quick, I have one statement, one question. This is another one where like MJ and I are not the target audience, right? Because MJ is witchy as hell already. MJ wakes up and the moon is saying hello to her. That's kind of
vibe. MJ walks into the room and you're just like, that's a witch. You don't,
it's not, you don't need to tell me, I know.
and I'm like, witchy as hell brackets evil, which is like a concept that needs like explanation. What? Where I'm like, yeah, it all, like, I'm a big witch nerd stuff, but mine comes around like backwards, that I'm like, yeah, magic is actually counter-revolutionary and it's used by institutions of power to fulfill a Maslow need of reification and deification of their existing power structure. So it's utilized to give meaning to their existing branches of money and control and authority. Stuff. So like, I have this whole elaborate theory about like Walt Disney being like a witch and stuff. Where so
I don't hate that. I mean, like, it sounds goofy at first, and then I was immediately like, no, I would watch that documentary and probably agree with it afterwards. I would.
He has so many concentric circles. Like, it's alarming how many concentric circles he built into things, and like big metal stakes he spiked the earth with.
I have to hard disagree with Sean. I don't think he was a witch. I think he was Melchizedek.
Oh, that works too. Yes, one or the other.
Yeah. And I don't mean like him. I mean like literally Melchizedek.
Was, yeah, maybe. Yeah,
Melchizedek came out and was all like, Abraham, that was really cool how you beat all the Canaanites. And then he left and built Disneyland.
That rocked. Yeah, good job. Anyway, how about this idea called Epcot? Yeah. but yes, so like I was not the target audience for it, and neither was MJ, and we both enjoyed the living hell out of it. So if you're listening to this and thinking like, I don't get this, I'm like, again, I've already got a candle burning in front of me, my like familiar is coursing around the rivers right now seeking out the spirit of lost things, like I don't need this book. You do need this book, dear listener. But yeah, my actual question, now that I've said that, it was about the process of this book. How, like, what was the process of turning it into a book? Like, were you diarying every day, and then was there a process of transmutation, or were you writing the chapters of the book, and then that's what you cut down during the editing step?
More the first. So okay. I and also, I mean, thank you. Like, we did write this book for hopefully agnostic atheist people who have been flirting with neo-paganism and witchcraft their whole lives. Not necessarily for witches, but it was my strong, strong desire that someone who already identified as a witch would pick up this book and at least not hate it. and hopefully maybe see themselves in it. But, you know, it does mean a lot to hear that. So thank you. I shamelessly took A.J. Jacobs's formula, The Year of Living Biblically. I don't know if you're familiar with this book.
Yes, very. Yeah. I'm sitting like 2 feet from a copy right now.
Yeah. So I read that book, and part of the idea of this book was, you know, has anyone done this but like for witchcraft? So A.J. Jacobs is a, you know, 45-year-old Jewish guy living in New York who wants to live by the Bible. I am a mid-30s millennial woman living in California. I want to do witchcraft. Let's play. So I had, the idea was that I would consume all of this literature as much as I could get my hands on and start applying these concepts, because there's no Bible in witchcraft, right? So just start applying these concepts to my life.
Actually Spiral Path, but
you mean Spiral Dance?
Yes.
That's your karma for getting on me earlier about saying
there's something. Also a very specific group out of Opelousas that believes Queen of the Damned. Is.
That is what whatever cult that. MJ is part of. Yeah,
I don't hate that at all. I would join an Akasha cult in a fucking heartbeat.
Here's some deep Louisiana witch lore for you guys.
Oh, nice.
And this is especially in the Opelousas area part of Acadiana. They went batshit when Queen of the Damned came out, and they thought, or. No, not they thought. There was some murmuring that, like, the plane crash that took the star, like, just as the movie was coming out, was some sort of sign of providence.
Mm.
And that, like, her performance was too pure and whatnot, and that's why she was taken, and I was all like, okay, that's weird. And there was a big, like, split about that. But the really big split that happened that I was privy to, because I was dating one of these girls at the time, was that whether or not Lestat in that movie was a crime, and whether like he meets the appropriate test of their values. Now, this was fascinating to me because I'm like watching people try to decide whether or not Harry Potter is like,
oh yeah,
taking Christian kids astray.
The rest of this podcast could be about Lestat, and I'm down.
Want to do that? Welcome to Interview with an Author, where we talk about writing communities, but mostly just the vampire Lestat.
Well, there was half that felt that Lestat being a rock star was like the perfect continuation, the idealization of everything that Lestat ever wanted. The other side that said that like it was a massive betrayal that unsexies him. And meanwhile, I'm like, I don't know, I've never talked to another woman that has ever said anything using the word unsexy to describe that particular Lestat. So I don't know what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I mean, like, at worst, he's super cringy, early aughts sexy. But Stuart Townsend as Lestat is achingly, searingly hot. Are you kidding me? Like, well, he's stupid. He's a himbo.
He's so dumb. Well,
flawless. Oh my God. He could disrespect my body. It would be fine.
Which Coven side do you land on? The side that says it makes perfect sense for him to want to become a rock star, or the side that says that that's anathema?
Well, I think if we're going back to I read the actual Queen of the Damned a long time ago, and anyone who has read the book and seen the movie will be quick to tell you, I don't even know why they're named the same thing, because the plots are wildly, wildly, wildly different. The characters are different. But my understanding is that, if I remember correctly, and if anyone wants to correct me who is listening, is that in the book, Lestat does become a rock star. It's just not the focus of Queen of the Damned. But so that's reason number one. I think that's correct, is that it's, I think, what Anne Rice intended. But two, I think Lestat's whole deal is he's like the ultimate devil. He's bratty. He's selfish. He's beautiful. He's obsessed with pleasure. He's obsessed with control. He controls people with pleasure. So that guy being a rock star, that tracks super well for me. Well, also, he's had like 1,000 years to learn how to play guitar. It's probably good.
I guess the only real problem I have is that, as we've learned from Steven Tyler, there's nothing predatory about rock stars.
Oh, Jesus.
God. Yeah. Also, Lestat is a predator.
No, you're right. It all makes sense. Well, right.
No, that's okay. It totally doesn't surprise me that the book shares no similarities with the movie, because I will never forget watching an Interview with the Vampire and just being totally stoked, and then going in and going, this sexy Spanish vampire with the big mane sure is a 13-year-old Byzantine cherub.
Why can they never get Armand right, no matter what happens? They never can get him right. Even in the... oh my God, have you seen the show? The new...
We tried, and I couldn't.
What? Oh my God, that show turned me into a gay man from the South. Like,
hit you with the Kingdom Hearts beam? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was obsessed, but okay, I mean, to each their own, but I thought that show was gorgeous, 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 and they still didn't get Armand right. I mean, it's how many times? Poor justice for Armand.
There, Interview with the Vampire, the original one with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, caused this weird narrative awakening moment in my father, who was watching it sometime in the 2010s. And then it just kind of clicked for him. And he leans up and goes, they're not gay, they're vampires.
This is the ongoing
tomato thesis, tomato, right? My friend. Tomato.
The podcast is that the Kinsey scale, where you go from like straight to gay or whatever. Our thesis is that vampire is perpendicular to that. That it makes the chart 3D. So
it's like, I love this. Yes.
You're just like, yeah, vampire. It's its own sexuality, because correct. I mean, vampire, right? Like, mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm a straight woman. And then I watch Interview with a Vampire and I'm like, I am a gay man now.
This is interesting, because I'm Team Jesse when it comes to Queen of the Damned. I was all about that girl and her space buns before we were calling them space buns. I'm like, I love you.
She's pretty cute. She's pretty cute.
I didn't get the chance to watch it when it came out, because I had a specific like theatrical budget when it came out, and I spent it on Reign of Fire.
No, I saw it in the theater with everybody, like right after the whole Aaliyah thing happened, and the theater was like the most wild theater, one of the most wild like theatrical experiences, because everyone like was just like
our level,
just crazy. Everybody was so excited.
Yeah. See, I'm actually on a team Akasha's husband who gets owned off screen in the movie, because that's like the funniest possible thing to do. Like, he gets his own chapter. He gets his own flashbacks in the book, not in the movie. Iliad literally off screens his ass, and then it just shows up and is like, I have killed my husband. And you're like, awesome.
She just bridges him off screen and then is like, I'm the most powerful being in the universe now, and you, Lestat, are my snack. Let's go.
Yeah, let's do this thing. Yeah. While wearing the most powerful fit I think there has ever been, right? Mm-hmm. Was there a book we were talking about or something? Yeah. Before
vampires? About Aaliyah and how she really understood the assignment in that movie. She really did.
Actually, I wanted to talk to you about this, and I don't know if this is like unkilling the author, but there's like, I feel like there's kind of a theme in like some of the references that you were going to, not just because you reference all of the movies that we like, right? Their like first quote from a movie I think was like John Milius is Conan the Barbarian, right? So we can't exactly be too mad about that. But like the Mummy, Godzilla, etc. But there's this like arc that in the very beginning, I think the first thing you mentioned other than that is the Subtle Knife by Philip Pullman, which is ostensibly a very atheist kind of work, you know, that it's nominally structured as a book about atheism and like defiance of God. And then like one of the last ones you reference when you're talking about one of these moments of like witchy ecstasy and like feeling close to like divinity is of course not Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Grail one.
It is Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, when he's in the Indiana Jones is in the temple. It's not Raiders. It's The Last Crusade.
Yeah, The Last Crusade, where which is very much about like the immediate presence of, you know, like capital G, capital O, capital D. And I was just wondering about like, were you reflecting that intentionally or did that just kind of happen? It's a fun coincidence.
Well, on the one hand, in all my writing, I try and be, I like to invite people in to have a conversation with me, and I'm hoping to throw things out there that are relatable, that make it seem like you and I have some shared culture. So you will enjoy hanging out with me and we'll finish my book and then say something nice about it on Goodreads or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. And I also just think it's kind of funny to mix pop culture with more serious stuff. But in the book early on, there is a central tension that is explored, which is I have this perpetual fear that I am deluding myself. And that comes about because I have believed, well, what angle do I want to talk about this from? A lot of neo-pagans are nerds. Mm-hmm.
The like 100% D&D.
That Venn diagram is a circle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have their fantasy books. They loved Greek myths when they were a kid. They have strong opinions about all these different, you know, franchises, from, you know, Game of Thrones to Marvel to, you know, Philip Pullman. And a lot of people, I mean, I talked to a lot of people who said they found Wicca via Harry Potter. And not that J.K. Rowling was writing about Wicca. She wasn't. Everyone knows that. But, you know, you start to think about these things. You start to want to go to Hogwarts and then you just Google what is your actual witchcraft in your environment. And then before you know it, you're reading Scott Cunningham, which has nothing to do with Harry Potter, even remotely. But you're like, whoa, this is sort of resonating with me. So I think I wanted to reference these things. Like, if you're someone who picked up my book, if you're someone who has felt like you have been flirting with witchcraft your whole life, but were afraid of literally becoming delusional and living in a fantasy world, which was my perpetual fear, I guess it was my way, putting in all of these fantasy references was my way of just poking myself a little bit.
Well, I felt it was like very Power of the Myth by Joseph Campbell, where he talks about like and myth being a little bit different than witchcraft, but the
another
same
book referenced in the book that someone has it on their shelf. They've got the goddamn Campbell in there, and I was like, Campbell mentioned.
Can you write a book about witchcraft without saying Joseph Campbell's name? I don't think that's possible. It has to be in there at least once.
Yep. Oh, totally.
Marjorie, who's the guy who wrote The White Goddess?
Oh, Robert Graves.
Yeah, don't read that one. That's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
He's even more Gardner than Gardner.
Marjorie, you're like, that's hilarious.
He's like the dumbest man who ever lived. He like is like, I will perfectly describe the ancient neo-pagan goddess religion. And then he just writes like literally the dumbest shit you've ever heard. You're like, that's all lies. And he's like, or is it? And he's like squinting
at you. I'm not saying it's not aliens. But we're not saying it's aliens either.
Well, I'm actually really curious because you and I know some of the same people in the Bay Area. And what made you choose, like, because I was reading, and in your book, you have this desire for community and you have desire for ritual and you have desire for rules a lot of the time. And so I never went down the Thelema path because I hated Crowley. And then I met like some people in the OTO, the Thelema community, and like they really offered a lot of the things that you were looking for, but I would have never sought them out because I was like, fuck Crowley, I'm not going to do any Crowley related stuff. So was that, did you feel similarly or did you were just like, I want to do witchcraft because of, like the power of the word witch and stuff?
Well, I mean, and what you're actually driving at is something I wish I had articulated better in the book that Thorne Mooney, I think, articulates also pretty well in some of her writing. The difference between spirituality and religion. And according to Thorne, and I agree with this, religion is more political and spirituality is more personal. But something else, I think, is that religion is something that makes you feel like part of a community and something that becomes an identifier. So you can be very spiritual and not be religious at all. You can be very religious and very in your community and very in this identity, but following all the rules, but not actually being spiritual. Or you can be both, or neither, of course. But I think people often use those two words as synonyms. And if anything, at the end of this year, I'm like, they are so, 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 so different. So I started the journey not really being able to articulate this very well and not having this opinion. And I wish I had gotten to it sooner because I think it would have cleared up some confusion. I wanted to be, I wanted to be a witch from the spiritual sense because I wanted to be self-actualized and I wanted to make all my own dreams come true. And you know, to like have everyone fall in love with me and to just feel crazy powerful and like my cats are happy all the time and everything is just great and I have money and like, ta-da, you know.
Witches have money, wait.
Well, no, you actually, honestly, you have the one secret to be a witch who has money because you're not addicted to rocks.
That's true. That's like, the one thing. And I'm, and yeah, I just,
that's like cool. Witch inflation, right? Like any money witches get is going to be spent on like, ooh, this is, look at this cool purple clear obsidian. And I'm like, that's not a real thing.
But no, I mean, near the end of the book, I was tired of being alone with my books and I did want community. I really, really did want community. And I envied, you know, Thelemites and Gardnerian Wiccans or people who were just in a coven with their pals. And I had had that before loosely, but I wasn't spiritual with it. I had been in a coven, but I wasn't spiritual. I was more religious and I just did it to hang out with my friends and we did like group healing and it was fun, but I wasn't, my soul was not in it in the exact same way. So I think I still want community now, but I'm not even 100% sure where I would go. Doing spirituality with people is so fucking intimate. I have had people inside of me who I would never, ever pray with, like ever, like consensually, just like, no, you know, that like, that's too intimate. Sorry. I know what we just did. You know,
it's also a really bad time for it too. Like,
Jesus doesn't want to be involved. Hang on.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it is. It's just so much more intimate than anything else you can possibly do. And intimacy is terrifying fundamentally because it's vulnerable. And well, anyway, we can. I don't need to explain why intimacy is terrifying. That's a whole other podcast. But
wait, is intimacy scary? Is that a whole thing?
Whole thing. And I'll just, you that.
I'll be the contrarian asshole. Is intimacy scary? No. Next question.
Yeah. Okay, Chad.
Yeah.
Let us all be like Chad. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I would potentially like to join a coven, but also there were some coveny things that happened in the book. And mm-hmm. there was also some stuff I kind of had to, I didn't want to write a searing expose. Like, I did go to a Gardnerian ritual and I very deliberately left some stuff out. Well, and it's not the most exciting chapter, but that was kind of the point. I was just like, I'm not going to cross this line. I'm sorry.
Tea detected.
Yeah. Like, it's, you know, I didn't want to, I really didn't want to betray anybody. I wanted everything to be really consensual.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that you would get a lot of enthusiastic consent if you rode the street cred from being the top Google of witch memoirs down in Louisiana. And this is on West or East. Stay away from that hellhole Shreveport, though.
And nobody in Shreveport, yeah.
I am actually going to New Orleans on January 29th for a live event, so it's good to know that.
Super relevant and timely. I had another question based on the people we both know, and my own practice actually is, like, I got really into trance dance because and I was really curious as to why you were like, I'm gonna go this like seated meditation route, and I wonder if it's just because it's common or if it was recommended in a lot of books or if you wanted to try it because it was different than what you're used to. Or
could I quote from the book right here? I feel like less like I'm in a holy trance and more like in a dance class trying to learn the steps. And I'm like nodding, like, yes, do that. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. That was the Gardnerian ritual. Mm-hmm. It was like, whoa. It was a lot of steps. But I think when you build things up that way, it does help them. It is not the source of their sacredness, but the fact that you memorize them and then repeat them is a sign of your commitment, which is a sign of their reinforced sacredness. So I actually really respect that. I just showed up and was like, holy shit, I had no idea this was that intense. Marjorie, you're a dancer. So my hope is that other dancers would read this book and like be like, yep. I wanted to try and do seated meditation because honestly, that is mostly what I had heard how you should do it is to meditate. You have to master your body, which is like ignore your body, but also be in your body and like breathe, but the correct way, and then clear your mind. And that shit was hard. That shit was really, really hard. I got that better.
Mastered. I've gotten really good at my body going, please, sir, no more tikka masala. I went, overruled.
And I got better as the year went on, but then finally I did read it in Cunningham where he was like, dance is a perfectly fine method to getting out of your brain. But I really wanted to, and I was a dancer, but I was like, I really want to try and doing it the you know, the quote unquote normal way. When we think of meditation and when we think of getting out of our brains and when we think of connecting to the divine, it's a person sitting with their eyes closed. And I really wanted to try and master that. And I fucking tried. And I'm not saying it didn't happen, but then at Witch Camp, they were just like, you can stand up if you want. And I just did. And I was like, oh my God, this is easier. Oh my God, I'm never sitting down ever again. No, this is it. This is it. This is it. I don't know. I don't even think I'm, you know, not like other witches. I think a lot of people are actually, this would be a better way for them to get into states of meditation and to states of trance. Mm-hmm. And I would like us to have that be a little more visible.
No, 100%. Sure. Yeah. I think you got Baudrillarded. I think you got simulacred with like the dude meditating in like lotus position.
Well, a mutual friend and teacher of ours. I'm not sure if you got to take one of the Moroccan Chicot dance classes with Natalie.
No. I mean, I have taken. I think I've done a little with her, but I mean, very extraordinarily little. Yeah.
And I thought maybe because like that tradition and some of the other ones that I've looked into in trance dance is very Eastern. And I wondered if you felt weird about like an appropriation thing by like a Moroccan dance. You felt like not right doing it and needed to find.
Well, and there's also. I feel so bad. Well, this is all the more reason I shouldn't have done it. I want to say the Tsar dance. Mm-hmm. And then there's the it's Iraqi and I can't remember the name. You wear the big, beautiful, long, like, thobe, and I want to say it's Khaliji dance, where you swing your hair around.
Yeah.
If you want to go on the fucking ceiling for 3 hours, swing your hair around for 5 minutes, okay? You'll see God. That's lemon squeezy. It's not even totally pleasant. I mean, I've done that and I understand the dervishes, like the whirling, how whirling becomes transcendental and makes you feel like you are connecting with God. But yeah, I can see how these things are related. I believe these things are related. I did not feel comfortable writing in a book, you know, with my whole chest, like, these things are the same. And I have tapped into that. Like, that just felt a little too presumptuous and too soon. But I personally do think they are related. But I wouldn't say that what I did swaying in the forest at a witch camp is the same thing as what a professional whirling dervish does to connect with God. I think that's not super fair. Mm-hmm. But you're right.
To be fair, the Sufis would gatekeep because we're women and not because of the way we're like moving our heads.
No, it's weird because Diana just accidentally blundered into like this one intersection of things that like I have a lot of value for, which is showing respect for the whirling dervishes. Like, I know that sounds like a really random thing to have strong opinions about, but like it unironically is. I'm like, just outside of this episode, there have been situations where I'm like, hey, leave the Sufis alone.
The Sufis are cool, man.
Yeah, we should leave the Sufis alone. This is also a pro-Sikh podcast, I want to say. If they can hold off the entire goddamn army from one bridge for like 200 years, right? Honestly, I'm down with that shit.
But I mean, to your larger point, I do think, Marjorie, maybe I could have, and I honestly would have liked to talk more about how other cultures have figured out that movement is absolutely a way to get to the divine. Like, it's why did I act like it was so hard? Why did I fight it for so long? I don't know. Maybe I fought it for longer than I should have.
We have to fight God for a while. Like, that is just what we do.
And I think it's super valid to like try something, especially because you were trying new things, and that's so much of the book is that you were trying like a new approach, a new ideas, new books, new traditions, and that kind of stuff. So I think I have done some seated meditation. I've done like a variety of different kinds of meditation, and I've stuck with some of them for a while, but I've just never found the like trance state to be as good as it can be with dance.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. I mean, I think maybe it felt like a cheat. Like, I had been, you know, I'm not like the super crazy professional dancer, but I've been doing this for like 20 years. And I thought if I just jumped right into trance dance is a form of meditation, it's like, well, all right, challenge yourself. What if you tried sitting still? Try sitting still, Diana. What if you did that for once in your life, you know?
And then your spine was like, absolutely the fuck not. That's not it. Like, who are you to try this?
That brings up another great Conan quote that's applicable to that exact situation, which is, if you tried sitting still, the gods of this place demand a heavy toll.
There is a price, barbarian.
There was one interesting bit. You were very respectful to all kinds of cultures throughout this thing, and perhaps a little bit too respectful to certain kinds of Gardnerian, which we will not talk any more about. But like, some of it was like you were resistant to like brujeria and stuff like that, and I was like, dog, well, that's Catholicism. Like, you're welcome. Come on in.
She's opposed to the bruja. You're a Gangrel player?
Well, it was resistant, but I was nervous because I am not Latina, and I was, some people have said, hyper aware of cultural appropriation, but I'm like, the thing is, in 2021, when I was researching this stuff, all anyone was talking about anywhere that I could see was cultural appropriation. Why are white people cultural appropriating everything? So I was perhaps excessively paranoid. I personally don't think I was. I think the editors, we did tone a lot of it back, but I did want to respond to that. And it's true. There is a lot of cultural appropriation in witchcraft. So when I stepped into a tradition that was abundantly not mine, not of my ancestry or anything, I really wanted to come correct. And that's why I went with J. Allen Cross, who was in the front of his book. He's like, you don't have to be Latin American to do this, but here are my rules. And I was like, okay, I'm going to follow your rules.
Don't do Wicca with it. And like, that's the one I have to always like tell people. Cause like that, the thing is, that's the reason why I'm being weird about it is cause it's literally like my family. Cause they're the ones like having weird dreams about the Pope or whatever, telling them that like an evil spirit is upon them. Right.
Amazing.
And, as I've mentioned to one of, to a person mentioned in this book, like I have been to enough masses in Spanish and Latin. You go ahead with it. It's fine. Right. Yeah. And like, so the idea that you're feeling culturally appropriative when doing fucking Hail Marys, I was like, Catholic means it's for you too.
Right. Right.
Yeah, no, well, it's such a weird intersection.
Also, I'm in California. Like, if we're really going to be real about the witchcraft that's around me, what's in California? There are like some neo-pagans in California, and I think there is probably a fuckload of secret brujas. I mean, tons,
100% hit me again.
Yeah. So it's like that's what's around. I think if we're playing by American gods rules, which is the strongest gods are the ones that most people believe in, I would like to fuck around with the brujas now, please. Mm-hmm. Get some shit done.
Unfortunately, you do have to go to mass with your weepy grandma, like just, 3 times a week. It's like...
just no love for the ventures, man.
Hey, I was a toreador, okay?
Okay.
I see how it is.
To respond to Sean's dreams, though, I want to inject my own dreams, which is me and my family also have Pope dreams, but They're actually about putting the Pope on what we call the Maleficarum Synod.
Oh! Hey, you can take your Protestant shit elsewhere. This is a Catholicism-only chat. No. Yeah, no. I just thought it was interesting because it's so much of it is a kind of strain of witchcraft that is fully inside Catholicism, right? Like, it is... like
the
heresy is coming from inside the house.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because the fucking country with the highest ratio of Catholics is in fact Mexico, and every single one of them believes in Santa Muerte, and like the Vatican's like, please stop believing in Santa Muerte and praying to her and all that shit, and they're like, no lol, we're 99% Catholic.
No lol, we're just gonna keep doing it.
Yeah. And it's, so it's just a kind of like, the, like, okay, here's some magic you can do. Like, here's like what you got to do. And you like bag up this oatmeal and like leave it outside because there's an evil spirit on this house. And like, here's what you do with an egg, right? It's like all this, like La Llorona is upon you. You need to figure it out or you're going to, if you don't stop crying, she'll hear you. Like the idea of these like house spirits and demons and like also just like regular Catholic demons, because I've mentioned on the podcast before that my mom was like traumatized by The Exorcist when she was like 4, that she was brought to as a pedagogical exercise to teach her about the reality of demons.
Jesus. Yeah.
We are heavy Catholics in the paint, right? So
well, I mean, I kind of love Catholicism for that reason. I dated a Catholic guy for about a year in my mid-20s, and I was like, you're a witch. You drink blood on Sundays. You're fucking hardcore. Like he was like, you want to go to church with me? I was like, fuck yes, I want to go to church with you. And then I went and I was like, this isn't what I thought. Why is there an acoustic guitar? I wanted to be like, I want you to speak Latin. I want incense. I want like the priest to go around back and like smoke a cigarette with Satan between breaks. And then they come back in and it keeps going. Like, that's what I wanted. But that's
the funny
not.
Thing is when you're like listing the cross quarter calendars and their associated religious days, like their Catholic days, I was like still in like a, yeah, it's color is green, but it's liturgical color is white. Like all the Catholic deep RAM kept like floating back up for like what the liturgical color for Candlemas was.
Right. That's a pretty open secret that like the Roman Catholics, you know, to help convert the Europeans, absorbed a lot of those pagan traditions into their holidays. And that's why we do so many things that we do around Easter and Christmas and da 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 da. Right. Mm-hmm. So, it was interesting. I mean, I guess if I ever was to become a Christian, I'd probably lean Catholic. I just don't like the Catholic Church so much, but like, the mysticism and the demonology. I mean, Catholicism is super occult. And that's before you even touch folk Catholicism and everything that's going on with brujery in Mexico, which is this whole other thing, and is very alive. I mean, very, very, very alive. And there's no contradiction. And I loved that blending. And I loved how seamless it was. And I love how J. Allen Cross writes about it. American Brujeria is a really beautiful book.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciated like the highlighting the cultural appropriation thing. I remember back in like 2015 or something, and when Twitter was still Twitter, we had like the hashtag tarot so white to talk about like how many tarot decks are just white people and very, very skinny white people. And you know, perfectly abled people and all of that crap. And like, there's no, like, now there are tarot decks where you have people of all different like physical capacities and different physical sizes and colors.
They were not perfectly abled. They were all like Shakespearean bit actors who probably all had syphilis, right?
100%.
I have a localized Louisiana question about this. We talked about how Catholics are shockingly witchy. How does the Rougarou down here deal with that? Like,
I know nothing about Louisiana Catholicism. Like, that shit is a mystery.
I'm wondering, if you take some of those Santa Muerta worshippers and you drop them in Acadiana, does the Rougarou eat them? Does the Rougarou get scared of them? Where does his jurisdiction end?
I think it might eat them, but that might also be like they might have like passage based on like old pirate deal made like a squintillion years ago, right? It's a whole deal where you're like, I don't know about that one. I would have to check with my guy. But also, you're on top of like the witchiest place ever because it's fucking backward cemetery. They built the fucking cemetery in reverse. Total.
No, I mean,
style.
Like, I know Salem is supposed to be the capital of witchcraft in America, but like, abundantly, absolutely, it is New Orleans, and I will not even be taking questions about it. Like, the capital of witchcraft in America is New Orleans, period. It just is.
It is. There are two things you have to watch out for when you're watching like the street performers in New Orleans. One of them is the pickpockets that are working with the street performer. And the other one is people trying to steal your hair for shit.
And like straight up.
Yeah, it's like not even a small thing. The amount of times I've been there, I'm like, okay, you know what? Hang on, we got to get a hair net because this this living statue is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so much like overlapping histories of occult, you know, non-Christian practices that blended together and then blended with Christianity. And, you know, I think the spiritual culture of New Orleans is so, so, so beautiful, very potent, terrifyingly potent, and, you know, could be good, could be bad. Watch your step. Be careful.
Be nice to leave. Ghost rate, right? Like every building is double haunted.
You can't watch your step in New Orleans. First of all, they take shit care of the streets. Second of all, there's no open container laws, and there's like $4 for like a gallon of liquor there.
Yeah, spirits too occupied.
Yeah, when the cops card you, they're like, let me see your ID. This says you're over 21. Why don't I see a drink in your hand?
I think that was pretty much an episode. Do you have anything else you want to say about the book or about the process of writing or witchcraft before we play out?
No, I mean, it means a lot to me that you guys really liked it. I mean, Marjorie, I know you better than, you know, Chad and Sean, but you've been a witch for a really long time. So the fact that you liked the book, I actually take as incredibly high praise, and really liked all your questions. No one has really asked me these questions in this way, so thank you tremendously.
Awesome. And now you can say that someone has actually asked you your question, what is your least favorite?
Yeah.
But no, I did genuinely like it, and I'm not just like hyping it up, and I have been genuinely like disenchanted with a lot of like witch books, and this has been a good gateway, and I'm actually going to look into your like recommendations and read some other things you have read that I liked that you referenced.
I think actually just springing off of the best book I read the whole year, and Marjorie, I think you would really like this book too. It's called Brujas, The Magic and Power of Witches of Color, and at first glance, it looks like just that it's only for witches of color. It's not. It's for everybody. I mean, it's about witches of color, but it was the book I enjoyed the most, and I'm white. And it's not. It's an overview of the movers and shakers in the Brujeria scene. It's written by Lorraine Montague, and she interviewed tons of people, their stories, where they're coming from, what they want to do. It's a welcome addition to the overwhelming number of books in this scene that are mostly just about Wicca and Wicca-derived witchcraft, but it is also this interspersed with that. Lorraine is giving us this absolutely searing memoir of her own life, her connection to her ancestry, her connection to the land. I mean, I cried like 7 times reading this book. Wow. It is dog-eared. She's such an incredible writer. She articulates so many difficult things about what happens when you really start to dig into where your magic is supposed to come from. Mm-hmm. It is the best book I read the whole year. So Brujas, The Magic and Power of Witches of Color by Lorraine Montague. I would definitely recommend you check it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually put it on my Goodreads to read list after I saw your TikTok about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I'm like obsessed with Lorraine, but it's in a amazing way that makes me look really good and not creepy at all.
Yeah. So I think that was an episode. Thank you so much for coming on, Diana.
Yes, it was a pleasure seeing you again.
Yeah, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me back. It's really fun to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I say you're welcome back anytime. If you wanna shitpost about people that don't like Lestat, then welcome aboard.
Yeah, we actually have to do like a bonus for pay episode that just like, okay, interview with a vampire. Let's do this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interview with Diana interviewing a vampire, probably. Yeah. Something like that.
I would so love to be back for that, or at a minimum I would just like to listen to it, but yes. I want to listen to people argue about Lestat.
I'll go fish some random person out of a swamp. There's at least a 50% chance he's a vampire.
And you find a guy in like an abandoned chateau just eating rats, and you're like, are you Lestat? And he's like, and you're like, yeah, that's good enough. Well,
the really weird thing is that like you don't go for the ones that are sucking blood out of people's neck. Those are not the vampires. Yeah, those are the people from Crowley.
Yeah, or Shreveport, as previously mentioned. We don't.
I was shown the greatest picture about Shreveport the other day, which simply said, what are the directions to the best Cajun food in Shreveport? And it said, head south about 150 miles.
Damn.
Strong. All right. This has been an episode of On Writing. In the description of this episode, there will be a link to all of our socials, including our Discord. Whereas if you want to talk to any of us, argue with us about the vampire Lestat should have not been a rock star in that movie, we will be there for it. It would also help if you give us a like, maybe leave a review on whatever you're listening to. And of course, there will be a Ko-fi that if you want to throw a few bucks at us, we promise it will go directly to wet food for Chad's cat, who has been a little bit under the weather lately. So we want to make sure she is well provided for. Mm-hmm. But above all else, we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.